Welcome to Three Bean Salad, the podcast with Henry Packer, Mike Wozniak and Benjamin Partridge. Hello, Henry. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
Hi.
I like that we've established, I mean, this is only the second episode, but we've established that you're the person, Mike, who says hello.
Yeah, and then I'm going to take the rest of the podcast off. I'm now exhausted.
I think, but Mike has a quality about him, which is you look at him and you think anchor, don't you think? He's got an anchoring in him.
It's the outer shell of the charlatan, I think is what it is. It's a lifetime of carrying myself as if I might possibly know what I'm doing, that I'm supposed to be where I am, that kind of thing. But it's a very thin veneer.
You have a trustworthy face. Just the dimensions of your face are just trustworthy. And definitely out of the three of us, you're the only one who could anchor a news show, surely.
Oh, that's true. Possibly not in this decade, but yes.
I think I could anchor a news show in like a small breakaway Soviet Republic or something.
Yeah.
But certainly not BBC One.
So like a revolutionary news show that was quite kind of low budget, done from under a staircase, and just with the sense that you're probably going to get killed within the next sort of few weeks.
Yeah, you can hear artillery shells.
One with spectacular footage of the moment that the junta raids your recording studio.
Yeah.
That would be, you'd spread like wildfire.
Yeah, so that's very much, so I think
you'd be a hero of the revolution.
That's the kind of news program I would be suited to do, but also would like to present.
Yeah, it feels like it's not going to last, is it? This isn't going to go ahead and become like a news night or a big hitter, is it, this show? This is very much seat of your pants. We're all going down together.
Because, of course, Newsnight started when a small junta led by Gavin Essler and Kirsty Walk stormed BBC Television Centre, and they're yet to leave.
Yeah. And they've just hung around.
And they've been there ever since. If you want it, you just got to go and get it. That's what Kirsty says, isn't it?
Yeah. And the only clue as to that remains is the strangely sort of sexy guitar riff at the beginning.
They keep the lights pretty low as well. I don't know if you've noticed, they keep the studio lights very, very low because they don't wish to be discovered at any point.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of American listeners. They won't even know what Newsnight is.
Oh, should we tell them what Newsnight is?
Can you imagine the most premium level news coverage nightly delivered with this kind of level of panache that is unwarranted, I think.
It's a deep dive, isn't it?
It's a deep dive. It's got a panache. It's got a level of kind of Bond-esque. The whole thing is basically just pure Bond, isn't it? They're all channeling Bond to a degree. They're well-dressed. They're smart. They're whip-smart.
They are whip-smart. It's so classy.
John Sopel? Is he one of them?
He's the American correspondent.
Can I say something which UK journalists have, and John Sopel has it? They get so turned on by American news, it's almost like a bit embarrassing to listen to.
Yeah,
they just
absolutely
freak out about it. Like anything that's to do with the White House or the press briefing room, John Sobel will be like, I just come back from the press briefing room in the White House. Oh, and the chairs were all laid out and they had little bits of paper printed out with a special logo at the top. I don't know, they just...
You want to be in the pool, apparently. That's the guy that keeps coming up. I want to be in the pool. I was in the pool today.
Mm. And Nancy Pelosi. I was in the lift with Nancy Pelosi. They're just like fans of a band or something.
But it's because American politics is so much cooler than... Like, the British politics version of that is going to a leisure centre and seeing, you know, some bloke who used to be a head teacher become an MP and everyone sort of claps limply, and it's just rubbish.
Yeah, and you don't get American correspondents going, I'm in Finsbury Leisure Centre. It's just not sexy.
And like the President of the United States gets the presidential car, which apparently you can fire like a air-to-ground missile at and it'll be fine.
Well, what's the nickname of that? It's called the hog or something.
The beast.
The beast.
Is this like super impenetrable car?
The passenger doors are as thick as a normal car, I think, as well. You know,
I think I'm lying when I say that it's got a thing where if someone approaches the car and tries to like bang on the window, it's got like flamethrowers that come out of the side.
I think it would be it's a series of settings. So it starts with just a little squirt from a water pistol. And if that doesn't work, there's a little prodder shoots out. Then it's your bow and arrow.
Well, it depends which extras you got. I think they went for all the extras, right? It's actually just a Hyundai i10 with all the extras.
Fully specced out.
With the casings of about three other Hyundai i10s outside it. Yeah.
Here's another thing they love saying is the Caucasus.
Yeah.
John Sopel just go, I've just been to the Caucasus. No one knows what he's talking about.
They do. Caucasus are. They've got some nice glossary. Even the Senate is a bit stronger than the Houses of Parliament.
Yeah.
Senator.
Bit more Star Wars, isn't it?
Senator!
Emily Maitlis, she's the other one.
I love Emily Maitlis. She's so badass.
Clearly, just the best.
She's absolutely kick-ass. She kind of has the vibe of a sort of classy movie assassin.
Yes.
You know, sort of quiet and intelligent.
And can go into a room with like 12 members of the Russian mafia and come out 5 minutes later and they're just they're literally sort of paint, they're just wallpaper.
And she's using one of their shins as a toothpick.
Yeah, she's in any situation heavyweight.
Yeah.
Basically, is what you're saying, right? Intellectual news or organized crime group heavyweight.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it
and
may
she
be.
Can...
I'd watch the movie. Yeah. I would watch the mateless assassin biopic.
Nice. Although I can imagine what a team of male writers would do with that character. Because I'm married to an actress. I see a lot of scripts with... I can imagine the character description would be something like, you know, she's hot, but she knows she's hot. But do the people around her know she's hot? Yes, most of them do.
So they would pummel the pure essence of Maitlis into a sort of Route One mush.
Absolutely.
Essentially. Yeah. The screenwriters would also throw in some Grisham type, she was top of her class, valedictorian at Harvard Law.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She's the kind of woman that could make a man's heart fall out of his trousers. You can tell from her eyes that she's got you down. This woman, she can do an operation on a penguin and also make a sweet frittata. You never tasted a frittata so good. Hey, what's that? Yeah, she just wrote an op-ed piece for The Guardian.
But don't approach her in a blind spot, because this kid did 3 tours of Vietnam and has got a purple heart and a golden star, whatever that is.
And that golden purple star goes pretty well with her eyes. I mean, you could see her as part of the Marvel franchise. I wouldn't be surprised if she's already being prepared for the next generation.
You don't think it's kind of Oscar fodder? It's not like a sort of artily shot biopic?
I think it could have been, but then it would have been, it would have gone through the Hollywood writers' room and been absolutely mashed into
place. Yeah, the only way you could... conceive of that film would have to be that she and Anthony Hopkins
are both play different popes.
Yeah,
and her part would be slowly whittled down until eventually she was just playing some white smoke, and that was it. Yeah, and then the Maitlis fan community would be up in arms.
So I'm imagining a kind of, I think it's probably a trilogy, the Maitlis trilogy.
Yeah,
kind of like a Bourne thing.
MMM.
Yeah, Triple M.
Triple M. Triple M 1. M would be the first one. You can break it down like that, because that's what posters are like now, isn't it? It's all like abbreviations and punctuation and stuff. The only other way you could see into it would be something like the Maitlis Chronicles.
Oh, yeah.
And she'd be a sort of intergalactic space empress who's been ejected from the galactic... you know, sort of UN because of her interview with Prince Andrew.
She really did take apart Prince Andrew. Like that was her crowning moment, I think.
Yeah.
That would, I mean, they probably could make a movie about that, right? That feels like Oscar fodder, that kind of like...
Well, in a Frost Nixon sort of way.
She took down the institution.
I think Prince Andrew is so deluded about himself that he would imagine that film about the interview being a sort of Rocky with him as the hero. And it would all be about him preparing. They'd have flown in an expert from New Zealand to prepare him for the different questions. We'd have a lot of...
And Maitlis is a sort of steroid-fueled Russian cyborg.
Exactly.
Hot-housed in a Siberian training camp.
Brought in to tear him apart. But his good old-fashioned British... sense of tailoring. And flashbacks to the incident in the Falklands when he stopped being able to sweat. And things like that. That'd be a rich theme in the movie.
There'd be like a super close-up on his brow and the first time he sweated again since 1983 as the little bead comes out and goes down his face.
What, when Maitlis asks him something quite penetrating?
Oh, nice. And we see her reflected and kind of upside down in the bead of sweat.
Oh, that's
absolutely
good.
Zoom in.
Maitlis.
Yeah. And then we cut to the Russian scientist who's controlling Maitlis remotely, which is Anthony Hopkins.
But it's a modern film, so he's not trying to do an eggy Russian accent, right? He's doing it in a regional British accent.
They've gone Chernobyl on it.
That's right. And he's secretly in London. He's commandeered one of the pods on the London Eye, and he's in disguise as a family from the Midlands.
But he's also the Pope.
Not many people can pull that off. That's a
and well, that's
a lot
why
to
he's
unpack
got,
in one role.
That's why he's got two Oscars.
Yeah.
So this week, it's lizards, isn't it, that we talked about?
It is lizards.
Yes, we recorded this a few weeks ago, just to be fully transparent about this. Obviously, the format of this show is to discuss topics that you send in, but we had stored some up, so this is another one suggested by our friend Gareth. Full disclosure, this was recorded before the death of our Lord and Saviour, the Duke of Edinburgh.
Although I've adjusted that.
Well, we mentioned him, and then Mike is so deeply respectful of the royal family that he went in and re-recorded a line to put him in the past tense, which must have been hard for you, Mike.
Oh, are we going that far up the wizard's sleeve,
not,
are we? Nice.
But not so respectful as to remove the suggestion that Prince Philip was a lizard.
The other thing I want to say is that we've done two episodes now. Both of them have mentioned the royal family quite a lot. And I also know that we've got a lot of American listeners. I think some of them will find it sort of quaint that we're talking about the royal family that we love so much. But I just want to impress on them that we, in general, I'd never think about them at all. It's just for some reason, whenever we record this, they sort of come to
mind.
It's
a fool's errand, though, isn't it, trying to make that point? Because we are discussing them right now, for example. Do you know what I mean? I think, so what you're worried about is Americans think that all we think about is the royal family. And you're trying to...
Yeah.
So you're sort of trying to sort of quash that by A, referring to the royal family, and B, referring to the fact that we've twice referred to the royal family and something else.
I mean, yeah, that's the long and short of it, yeah.
I think it's about showing, not telling, with making points about one's interest in the royal family. So, or one's level of interest. So I think the real value is going to be in us not bringing up the royal family as much.
So you should in future recordings not wear that Prince Andrew fleece, for example.
Is that, for example.
That's
one of the little things we can do.
Okay, because that might be what's making us think about it in the first place.
It could be that.
So our theme for today is lizards. Here long before we arrived, and no doubt here long after we're gone.
You know when people say, oh, lizards haven't changed for millions of years?
Yeah.
Or they'll say it about sharks and stuff as well. They go, this creature hasn't changed for millions of years. How are you supposed to react to that? I never know what I'm supposed to feel in that.
I think you're supposed to feel a degree of wonder.
Just that it hasn't changed. Isn't it more amazing that things have changed? I mean, evolution is incredible, isn't it, right? So what they're saying is, here's an example of evolution that when it didn't happen.
But they're
supposed to celebrate that.
They've already reached, like, they're the optimum thing. They don't need to evolve anymore.
Have you seen a lizard? You're saying that's the optimum thing? That thing crawling around the ceiling on your holiday, eating insects?
I read something on the internet the other day that said that there's a phenomenon in evolutionary science where over the millennia and whatever, various animals, different animals, have evolved into a crab. But like completely independently, what? Like different things have ended up as a crab.
Well, like a beaver and an alpaca.
Yeah, yeah, and whatever.
They eventually meet the shores of Brighton.
So that means there are multiple sort of lines of family that lead to crab that aren't related to each other at all.
Yeah, it's like all roads lead to Rome, but all... organisms eventually turn into a crab because the crab is like the ultimate. It's purely evolved in the correct way.
So what you're suggesting is that the crab is the perfect organism.
I'm not suggesting it. I'm asserting it strongly.
When it comes to there can be only one, it's going to be down to shark versus crab is what you're saying.
Yeah,
for final dominance of the earth. Or is this mankind thing is just a passing phase?
So do you think we're on our way to being crabs?
Well, the science suggests we are. We're just taking the long scenic route to the final crab.
I tell you what, you know, this, when you think about it, has there been an increase in sidling?
Yes, undoubtedly.
There has, hasn't there? Think about the crime stats. There's more sidling than ever, right? People are sidling up to each other. That's probably a sign, potentially.
What do people love to do more than anything else when they go on holiday? Go for a paddle in the sea.
Of course.
Go for a paddle in the sea.
Of course, in America, a pavement is called a sidewalk, isn't it? For very
good
reasons.
Oh, my God.
I know exactly what's happening.
What's the one thing we would all do to improve our hands if we could?
Turn them into claws. One larger than the other.
Yeah. Why am I playing this concerto on the piano when I could be roughly bashing it out with pincers? Yeah?
It's all falling into place.
We are, as we evolve as a society, we're also making better and better external protective clothing, aren't we?
Yes.
Are you saying we like getting dressed?
I'm saying we like getting dressed. We all love to nestle between two thick slices of floury white bread.
And well, that actually sounds quite nice.
And we're getting better at making protective exoskeletons, I'd say, compared to where we were 1,000 years ago. You know, 1,000 years
are you talking about
Gore-Tex?
I'm just going to pause you there and literally ask you, what are you talking about with that one?
I'm talking about we've got a natural lurch towards the shell. Is what I'm saying.
Are you talking about riot police?
I'm talking about riot police. I'm talking about sensible cyclists.
That's a good point.
I'm talking about people in the skate park.
So you think that maybe humanity is barreling towards becoming a kind of lycra crab?
I'm saying on some level, we know where we're heading and we're helping ourselves along our way.
And if you look at that cycle helmet technology, it is that organic technology, isn't it? Where it's lightweight, but it's durable, but it's curved to the shape of a middle-aged man's head.
That's right.
It's got that organic technology. Where's the crossover? Where does the technology end?
Yeah.
And this really boring fucking dick called Brian starts. Do you know what I mean? When you see a middle-aged cyclist. Also, you know the way they walk? When they're walking and they've got the shoes on.
Yeah.
The clackety-clackety shoes. The clackety shoes. Across the pavement in the clackety shoes.
Yeah, all of those guys like eating bacon. What they don't tell you is that they like it on a string. That's the they're keeping from us.
And also, I can guarantee you something. Mm. If you get 5 or 6 of those guys and you stick them in them ginormous buckets, full of water, they will panic in the same way that crabs do. They'll try and scrabble up the sides in the same way that crabs do. And eventually they'll lose energy and just sort of sit there looking a bit depressed.
And then you can crack them right
crabs
open.
Do. Yeah. And you can crack them right open.
And gorge on the fleshy innards.
Delicious.
Get some vinegar in there. It's a nice seaside treat with some vinegar, isn't it?
Yeah.
The sound of gulls and a special little fork to get up in the shin and get all that flesh out of the shins.
The big argument has always been, do crabs and lobsters feel pain when you boil them to death? And the...
Yeah, because there's an intuitive answer, isn't it, which instantly comes to mind.
But I think the consensus is that they do feel pain, but they're too stupid to associate pain with distress. So pain for them is just like a little light going meow, like in your car when it kind of goes, oh, we ran out of oil. But you don't feel sad because of it. You're just like, oh, here we are. Do you see what I mean? So they experience it, but they're just like, that's life.
Well, that's ideal, isn't it? Because pain is a warning system, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
So really, the fact that it hurts as well is quite annoying because ideally you'd just have a dashboard like lobsters do.
Exactly.
A kind of dashboard that just tells you your leg is in trouble rather than your leg's hurting.
But people ignore a dashboard, don't they? People will ignore a dashboard warning light for weeks or even months at a time.
Oh, that's a good point. Think about the amount of times I've run out of petrol,
That's why every lobster goes in for an MOT every year. I mean, we've gone off topic here. I mean, we're meant to be talking about lizards.
That's a good point.
Well, what is a lizard, really, but a crab without its shell?
Well, like everything, it's going to be a crab at some point.
Exactly.
So it's just a question of when this podcast goes out.
The thing that first comes to mind, lizard-wise, is the old tail comes off if you grab it.
Yeah, is that true?
The thing is that it comes off and regrows, isn't it? That's the...
Oh, that's the point. Yeah, yeah.
That's the fact. Although I did have an acquaintance of mine who lives locally to me, a 7-year-old, who only a few days ago was trying to tell me that this also applied to the limbs of a lizard, which I took issue with.
Can I just quickly back up on something you said there? You've got a 7-year-old acquaintance.
Yeah, quite a few knocking about in the area. A lot of primary school age acquaintances. Yeah.
So not a friend, then you wouldn't go.
I wouldn't go far as that, because we wouldn't. We get on, absolutely. It's more of a friend of a friend, or you know, friend of a relative, really. So, but we wouldn't. You know, for example, in COVID restriction times, we wouldn't go out as a pair for a walk. We wouldn't grab a cappuccino together.
No. But if you cross paths in a pub toilet or something, you'd do a nod and a brief.
We'd say hello. Yeah, we'd pass the time of day. Absolutely. I'd ask after her family. She wouldn't ask after mine. So that level, it's quite one way. But the point the 7-year-old was making, whether or not she was right about the fact that if you chop a lizard's leg off, it can grow back, there is some sort of regrowth thing there. And she was talking about the potential applications.
But she thinks it's the limb. So
no, but I mean, as in mankind, as in like, you know.
So if you were to lose a limb, say war veterans, for example, you could offer to replace a lost limb with a small lizard's tail.
Yeah, or if someone's cycling down a hill and their ears fall off,
they can have two lizard tails on the head.
Exactly. Is that possible? And do we want that?
No. So was she talking about the possibility of human limb regrowth?
Human anything regrowth?
Well, you're a man of science, Mike. I've often wondered this, and I wonder whether you can clear this up for me. Mm. There are certain parts of your body, right, that do replenish themselves, right?
To a degree.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you bite off a tiny bit of the inside of your cheek by mistake, I've done that in the past.
Yeah.
And maybe a tiny like little milligram of human flesh disappears or gets eaten. That will be replaced, right?
Yeah.
Fingernails.
Yeah.
Fingernails, hair. Your liver, famously.
But Mike, what is the threshold above which the body just doesn't bother anymore? Like, so a big gash in your arm will eventually heal up. But if I cut off my arm, it just gives in.
Well, even a big gash in your arm depends how deep you go, right? Because you might if it's a little skinny, thin gash, it'll heal up. But if it's deep, you'll get a scar, won't you? It won't completely come back. Similarly, your noggin, right? If you nosh up a couple of brain cells, they ain't coming back. That's a one-way street right there.
This is that. So I remember hearing that fact. Yeah, that brain cells don't regenerate. So yeah, is this in any way linked to there are certain things which keep growing and certain things which don't, aren't there?
Ears. Prince Charles's ears.
Prince Charles's. Well, no. Human. Sorry, excuse me. That's not just him. Human male ears.
Right.
Get longer.
Longer.
They don't grow. They get long. So you end up with longer and longer ears on men, especially. You'll notice that the ear doesn't tend to grow out so much as down. So you get a long,
they keep
fleshy
going, but
ear.
I don't know if the other thing people like to say is that carries on after death, like fingernails keep growing after death. But again, I think that's a bit of a fallacy. The fingernail thing, I think, is more that someone is, you're kind of Birkenhead grave robbers rocked up, dug someone up, and they remember them having a lovely set of freshly manicured nails just before they were taken down in a wagon accident. But when they dig them up to sell them, lo and behold, they've got great big fingernails. But I think that's on the whole really because everything else around it is sort of withered and reduced. So it's relative.
Well, I'm just picturing those photos you get. You know, you'll get a photo of the amazing lady who's never cut her fingernails.
She alive or dead?
Well, she'll be alive in the photo, right, okay, but dead since, generally. Because I'm picturing quite an old black and white photo, but they're always smiling and they've got these incredible nails that curl all over the room and like all over.
They'd be brilliant for for angling and things, or for litter picking and whisking.
The rest of most of the time, those are an absolute nightmare, aren't they? I mean, just the basics of getting up in the morning and sort of.
Oh yeah, your partner's going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting at home, a lot of very basic tasks. It's clear what she was up to.
There's a lot. Also, there's a long period in that career where your fingernails are just really annoyingly long for you and everyone you know, but you still can't actually monetize it yet. I'd say there's probably a good decade.
You're just waiting for the sweet payoff when someone's going to document you in a sepia photograph.
You end up in some freak book compilations. You probably wonder if it was worth it at that stage. So anyway, that's a bit of a diversion.
Mm.
We were talking about lizards. We were interested in skin, in regeneration of the... Oh, have either of you seen that documentary on Netflix? It was something like My Octopus Friend.
I've seen a bit of that.
Basically, over lockdown, there's things happen where, you know, like there's fads, obviously, in TV and stuff. There's like everyone's talking about something. But the turnover of that is so fast now. But there was basically there was like a sort of day and a half where everyone was obsessed with My Octopus Friend.
We jumped on that bandwagon and we got so far with it, but it was interrupted by Pam, and we haven't returned to it. I think because the next must see then came along before we had a chance to finish it.
Right.
Just to explain, Pam is your dog.
That's right. And
yes.
But yeah, the octopus did a bit of regenerating, didn't she? I think
exactly. So it's actually called my octopus teacher.
Oh, wow.
Which just sounds like the absolute kind of cynical tripe children's book idea that. Shit sounds every 2 weeks. I suppose it just sounds like a celebrity sort of children's book, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Right. So what's not been done? I don't know. Kids have teachers. I'm in a hurry. What isn't a teacher isn't normally what? Different.
A radiator.
A teacher could be a radiator. No, my radiator. My what? Victorian radiator or
no.
My teacher who's my ukulele.
Curtains.
Curtains. Teachers.
Broom,
two of them.
Maybe a
drawing. A, it's complicated.
What about an animal sort of some sort? Squid. No, it's close, but it's not quite right.
Been done. It's too many squid. Giant squids. Kids say it doesn't go well with the under nines at the moment. Giant squids because it's seen as threatening. This meeting is we've really got to crack on here. We've really got to crack on. I'm a celebrity. I'm trying to write a children's book. I haven't got all fucking day. I'm trying to write a much loved million selling children's book. Do you know what I mean?
Octopus. No one's done octopus.
Octopus children's book. Right. Okay. Bye. I'm off to present a show on Radio 2. But so it's called My Octopus Teacher, and it's your classic story of depressed man. Loses the will to live, and
lives in an extraordinary idyll, which must help if you're having a crushing breakdown.
He goes out snorkeling one day and he meets an octopus, and they hit it off instantly.
Who, for the sake of this episode, we'll just say the octopus is a sort of lizard, shall we? Just to make things easier.
It's a kind of aquatic lizard.
What is he taught by the octopus?
It's basically it's SATs. it's geography, economics, and not biology, which is one of the ironies.
At what stage does he have sex with the octopus?
Well, that's the thing, because the octopus is in a teaching, caring role. It's very, very, very. Controversial.
Well, there's a will they won't the element, of course, but we never get there in the end. You know, that's it's just suggested that this forbidden love, it's like the end of Lost in Translation. You know, there's in the last scene he whispers gently into the octopus's ear, but we don't know what he says.
Well, there's a great scene when he's ready to do it. He's ready to sleep with the octopus because he tells his wife he's leaving him, and he goes looking for the octopus, and he chases the octopus around the reefs for ages, then taps on his shoulder. The octopus turns around. It's actually a squid. It's the wrong one. So the point I'm making is to do with lizards is that the octopus loses an arm.
Or a leg.
Or a leg. And it's very, very sad, but then it grows back.
How does it lose its arm? Shark.
I think it's shark. It is shark. Yeah,
it's
shark
attack. Nasty little shark.
But Mike, and I don't think it's asking too much to ask you this. Do you think that the fact that octopuses can regrow tentacles and lizards can regrow their tails means, that in theory, the science could be there for humans to do that with their whole bodies and basically become immortal?
Well, I'm the guy to ask, right? I do have biology A level. Let's not forget that. I think immortality is just around the corner. Absolutely.
It was quite a horrible day when I learned that octopuses have got a beak. You don't. No one tells you that as a child.
It's a disturbing idea, isn't it? To be pecked by an octopus.
Is it true? Is that true?
Did you not know this, Henry?
No.
So if you look at if you look underneath all the arms in the central bit, it's got a sort of I think I'm right in saying a sort of combi mouth anus that that has a kind of beak on the end.
I mean, when is something a beak? I mean, how do you define it? Do you know what I mean?
If it can build a nest and it can sing, it's a beak.
Now, I want to get to the truth of this. And it has got, has it really got a combi mouth anus?
Well, I think so.
That's incredible. And the, is the beak to do with the mouth bit of it and the anus bit of it? It's both, is it?
I'm afraid we've reached the edge of my expertise when it comes to octopus, beak, anus, mouths, but I'm pretty sure that's what's going on.
And how does that relate to combi boiler technology? Is it a similar? Because combi boiler means you don't have to have a water tank.
Yes.
And does a combi mouth anus mean you don't have to have an intestine, therefore? It just goes straight in and out? I thought the Zoom had broken there, but that was that was a genuine, absolutely stupefied pause.
You basically stumped us all.
So, lizards.
The other thing about lizards is the belief, the widespread belief, that the British royal family are indeed lizards and not human beings.
Of course. There's the whole conspiracy lizard.
Are they indigenous to this planet, those lizards, or are they space lizards?
Are they not? I think they're space lizards.
They're shape-shifting space lizards, yeah.
Are you? Would you have been on board with it had they been domestic?
Is this a borders issue for you?
So lizards are kind of generally portrayed as nasty in a way, which maybe feels a bit harsh, doesn't it? Because he's obviously seized on that conspiracy theory. What's his face?
David Icke.
What's he called again?
David Icke.
David Icke, because lizards feel sinister.
Because they're literally cold-blooded. Is that why? So we assume that they're also metaphorically cold-blooded. Yes, I don't know what the grounds are for the lizard thing. Well, without the lair of the lizards, just a simple conspiracy saying they're really powerful rich people and guess what, they run some stuff. It's, you know, I mean, people add all sorts of atrocious and racist and other details to those things, but you can understand how someone might construct a conspiracy theory like that. But what I don't get is where the lizard bit, where that came from.
I think...
Because that's quite a bold detail to throw in.
You're right, because up until then it's actually quite convincing and maybe even has some truth to it. But it sounds like he's got on a roll and it's like he's been chatting to some people and they've been buying it. I mean, he used to be a sports commentator, so he was probably talking to Des Lynam. I assume it was a chat with Des Lynam and
Alan Hansen
and Jim Rosenthal.
They're in the Emirates Stadium after the match. Having a Cinzano and lemonade. Ike's holding court.
Yeah, and he'd have started talking about how the royal family, maybe they control stuff and maybe big business and bankers control things. And, you know, Lynam obviously would have been high as a fucking kite and just eating it up, wouldn't he?
Yeah, Lineker throws in the military-industrial complex and that just spurs Ike on even further.
Yeah, exactly. But then he probably gets on a roll and then just chuck. You know, sometimes when you're on a roll, you're feeling overconfident. You just push it a bit too far and he chucked in the lizard thing.
And he had to stand by it.
Maybe at that point.
But Lynam lapped it up.
Lynam lapped it up. Lapped it up. Hansen just would have played his cards very close to his chest, I imagine.
So you're saying it's probably just a moment of sportscaster bravado.
Yeah, it could have been like, one of those great moments sports commentators have, like you know, he's going to win the title back at 38. Prince Charles is a lizard. It's a similar moment of just inspiration that hits.
Also, what doesn't make sense about the conspiracy, even though, of course, there are lots of things that don't make sense about it, is how do they explain people marrying into the royal family? So Kate, you know, who's married to Prince William, is a lizard, a shape-shifting lizard. Mm. At what point does he reveal to her that he's a shape-shifting lizard? Does she become a shape-shifting lizard as they
is
get married?
Is he lizard or is he half lizard? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, because Diana's not lizard. Well, that's it.
Does that mean he's half shape-shifting as well? So his upper body stays as Will, but his lower body can turn into like a sort of a yak.
A yak in heat.
Yeah.
So if you imagine the Queen is 100% lizard.
Yeah. Mm.
She marries Prince Philip, who's just a Greek man, but not a lizard.
He must have been lizard as well, mustn't he? With the greatest of respect.
Oh, so he's lizard as well. Yeah, I think just a separate stream of, yeah.
sort of distant cousin lizard. Yeah.
So that makes Charles 100% lizard.
Yeah.
Diana, you're saying, is not lizard.
Not lizard. Yeah. Full mammal.
Right.
Of course she isn't. Did you see the way she talked to children in hospitals?
Yeah, exactly.
Ben, the idea that you're even suggesting that is quite offensive.
No, you're not going to be able to give comfort to landmine victims if you've come out of a leathery egg. It's not. It's just impossible.
Okay, so Diana's full mammal. That creates William and Harry, who are both half shape-shifting lizard and half human.
Yeah, one of whom is struggling with it, I would say.
Yeah, which one?
I think Harry's having a bit of a hard time.
Prince William's not having a great time either, but sure. So the reason that Harry's struggling is not because of the sustained racist media attacks on his wife. He doesn't give a shit about that.
I think he's found a really good clinic in California that is, reckons they can sort out the scaliness of his lower abdomen once and for all.
I see.
Is he trying to de-lizard himself?
I think so.
California is the kind of place that might happen.
Either that or the cold-blooded element of him prefers the warmer climes of California.
That's a good point.
It might be that being in the UK makes him feel all tired and gloopy.
And it's probably California's probably a better place to breed the live termites he feeds on.
So lovely, lovely hot rocks to sort of scamper about and skitter up.
Yeah.
And Meghan's full human?
Full human.
I think Meghan is full human. I'm just doing a good family tree here. Because I think that... Kate, we look at how seamlessly she has you know, been with the royal duties and stuff. She's got to have some lizard in her already, don't you think? So I think Kate is half lizard at minimum, which means
I think that's likely.
Kate and Will's children will be three quarters lizard.
Well, unless we don't know how the genetics of it works. I mean, it could be that, you know, perhaps if you had four kids, for example, you know, one of them would be 100% lizard, one of them would be 100% human. I mean, we don't.
Oh yes.
You know, I mean, it's likely to be a mix, of course.
And one of them would be a ginger tabby cat. That's right. I mean, that could
There'd
happen.
Be a wild card factor
with
well.
The shape-shifting.
Yeah,
Yeah. Princess Eugenie, of course, is a tortoise.
That's right. You sort of know you're on holiday when you've seen your first lizard.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? It's really good when you see a lizard on holiday, for me.
Because you'll point it out. You'll go, lizard, I saw a lizard. Look, there's a lizard.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Which would be me saying to you, look, there's a pigeon or something. It's like, it's an utterly unremarkable animal. But for British people, are we one of the, I'm just putting this out there, right, just like, I've not thought this through. Are we like the only non-lizard nation, potentially?
We do have lizards in Britain a bit, don't we? I think in like Cornwall is lizards and... the slightly warmer areas.
Are you thinking of the Lizard Peninsula?
I'm not. I'm thinking of actual lizards.
Domestic lizards?
Yeah, we've got them. We've got them.
That's like saying we've got domestic snakes.
We do.
No, I know. It's like saying that, because people do say that as well.
But it's true.
That's like saying we've got domestic wildcats.
Well, yeah, we do.
We do, don't we? Yeah. Where would you draw the line on reintroduction? Bearing in mind, at one point, the Earth was just one big sort of, you know... continent, and we had a bit of everything.
I'm really into it. I'd love it.
Do you like reintroduction?
I'd be well up for it. Wolves is the one they want to do, isn't it? Bears.
You know, when the first mother has a child taken away by the wolves.
Yes.
There'll have to be a bit of soul searching at that point, when they're about the whole reintroducing wolves decision.
Bring her to me.
But when the wolf attacks start, because obviously there will be wolf attacks, won't there? Because wolves, won't there? I mean, at that point, how do you talk your way out of that one?
I don't think people will talk about it much. I think probably the shepherds will get tooled up, and the conservationists will make some placards, and it'll get fought out in the hills and the valleys.
Are they going to reintroduce wolves? It's happening.
They want to in Scotland, but I'm pretty sure they're not going to, because
what's the advantage of the wolves? Yeah, yeah.
One of the advantages, this is quite boring, but one of the advantages is they keep down numbers of things like deer. And deer, if you have too many deer, because they currently roam unchecked, apart from people hunting them, they strip the fauna too much, which means you end up with fewer butterflies, which means less idyll. So it's all out of balance at the moment, because there's no predators in Britain.
Yeah, and so that would obviously that would be what to focus on while you're being swallowed alive by a wolf. Would be that.
Yeah, you're bringing nature into balance.
beautifully.
Yeah,
you're part of the solution. Although not for that meal, obviously, because that meal should have been used on a mischievous dough, but instead it's been used on you. And what haven't we talked about with lizards? What have we missed?
We didn't talk about the lizard that I quite like, which is the one that it lives on the hot sand of the Sahara, I think, and it's always got alternate legs up in the air all the time. You know, it's always doing this up.
Oh, really? Because it's so
up down.
It's so bloody hot.
It's so bloody hot. It's like oh bloody hell, oh like that forever.
Like an Englishman in a midday Mediterranean beach who's forgotten his flip flops.
Exactly.
I'm not aware of that.
Have you not seen him?
There's the chameleon, of course, the colour changing. That's a neat trick. We haven't discussed that.
That is a good one.
Well, that's where you'd assume the idea of shape-shifting comes from. A chameleon's halfway there.
Of course. Yeah. But it's more about sort of blending in with different kinds of wallpaper.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't talk about crocodiles or alligators.
Are they lizards?
Are they lizards? No. They're a lot like lizards. Are they?
I mean, it's becoming quite clear we don't know very much about lizards.
No, if that feels like the sort of question we should all be able to answer.
Absolutely.
Very easily and with great certainty.
What, is whether a crocodile is a lizard?
Yeah, but I don't feel I can. I feel like I can say it's a reptile, but then as soon as I say that, I'm now full of crashing doubts.
I'm going to put this into Google and see what comes up. If you write, is a crocodile... If you write, is a croc...
I'm going to say no. Google. There you go. I'm going to put my... neck on the line.
I'm saying yes.
You get... is a crocodile a lizard? No.
Yes! Or did I say yes?
You said yes.
No.
But I feel it was arbitrary as to who chose what.
Alligators, crocodiles, caimans and gharials are all... But, oh, God, a brilliant word. Do you know what alligators and crocodiles are?
Well, let's hear it.
Crocodilians.
Oh. Very good. We didn't mention... dinosaurs, which are like the main...
No, of course.
Oh, shit.
Lizards. I guess they're
when
lizards.
Right?
When lizards ruled the earth.
If you could go back and tell a T-Rex that in 2021, there'll be no T-Rexes, but there will be salamanders still around.
The only T-Rex will be nothing furious. More than a wind-up plastic toy on a child's shelf. I don't think he'd believe you. But just in the same way that if you told the average guy on the street today, listen, you know... few million years from now, you're not going to be here, but I'll tell you all who will be here in your terraced house is a crab, and they probably won't believe you either.
And you say a few million years, Mike, I fully believe it's going to be a matter of decades,
right? Okay. Yeah.
And I think it's a brighter future for me, you and your children.
my wife went on holiday, right, this is before I knew her, she went on holiday to Jamaica once, and staying in these like beach huts. And in the middle of the night one night, there was a knocking on the door. And she went to the door in the middle of the night, quite freaked out, opened it, there was no one there. Went back to sleep. And the knocking started again. Mm-hmm. Went back, opened the door, there was no one there. And eventually she realised that, yeah, there was a crab knocking at the door.
With a package to sign for.
A package to sign for, and it was... because it was before Yodel. And, of course, that's what... it's effectively nature's land-based drone, isn't it? A crab.
Which I think concludes our discussion of lizards very nicely.
Dealt with. Okay, so that was lizards, I think dealt with conclusively. Now, thank you to everyone who's got in touch, either at our Twitter account, beansaladpod, or our email address, 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. I think the big issue that's come up this week, mainly, the theme of a lot of the correspondence has been reacting to something I said in last week's podcast, and I'd just like to publicly apologise for that. Which is that I said that the kind of bird that can tear your face off, the flightless bird, is a rhea. Turns out it's not a rhea at all. It's called a cassowary. And a rhea is that kind of small emu.
Oh.
By all accounts, very sweet, very nice. And I want to say sorry because I know that a lot of people that have listened, maybe who had pet rears, became scared of them, destroyed them. I know that there's a small safari park in the West Midlands that destroyed all of the rears.
Well, if anyone's watching BBC News, they'd have seen the helicopter footage of the piles of rears being burnt.
The other side of that coin is that down the road from me in Paignton Zoo, there is a cassowary.
Oh, no.
Whose supervision has become so lackluster in the last week as a result of our podcasts that the cassowary has decimated the zoo.
They immediately changed him to code beige security, didn't they? They lowered his security to code beige.
Exactly. And he's torn the place to shreds. He's had two with three gorillas. He's absolutely minced up the panini booth, and it's a mess. That's on us.
That is on us.
And also there have been people out there, you know, walking through the jungle. They'll see a cassowary. They'll think, well, I don't have to worry about them. That's not a rear. And then they'll have had their face pulled off.
Here, buddy, buddy. Here, buddy, buddy. Here, buddy, buddy. With a little handful of nuts as they coax it in. Only to find that entire hand is gone.
May I read a section of the cassowary Wikipedia page?
Yes, please.
Cassowaries have three-toed feet. The second toe, the inner one in the medial position, sports a dagger-like claw. Ooh. That may be 5 inches long. The claw is particularly fearsome, since cassowaries sometimes kick humans.
That's like the cleaning lady in the Bond film, isn't it? Who's got the knife in her shoe? That's basically that.
She's got the cassowary shoes.
The cassowary shoes.
So yeah, sorry about that. We've had a lot of tweets about that.
I did a little bit of Googling as well, and I know that cassowaries do come under the subset genus.
Uh-oh.
Species.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. I think we've already known what our next topic of correspondence is.
No. It's to do with the flightless birds with sexy legs, because they are in that subset, aren't they?
Here he goes.
And I did a bit of Googling, and I suppose, unsurprisingly, it makes sense, I suppose, is that it's an evolutionary thing, apparently, that's developed to compensate, because they can't fly away from foes. They can't fly. So the sexy legs have developed as a
honeypot.
Essentially, it's the honey trap. It's nature's honey trap. So if you're a Homo sapiens, if you're hunting or whatever, you go into a forest and there's a clearing in the forest, what will happen is...
You'll see a pair of sexy legs in a bush.
Exactly. The cassowary will make sure most of its body is concealed by the bush, but the legs will be sticking out. And
right. So just a sexy leg with a 5-inch claw at the end.
Yeah. The hunter puts his rifle down.
Just a sexy leg with a three-toed foot, and the medial one being a hook-like claw. The hunter puts down his... He's not got a gun yet, mate. He's got a spear.
Okay.
It's Homo sapiens.
Okay, okay.
Puts down his spear.
Hang on. We are still Homo sapiens.
Correct.
Early man.
Early man. All right, early man. And the other thing that will happen is a sexy jazz saxophone will appear to start playing.
Right.
And that is the cassowary's call. Is a sort of sensual jazz. It sounds like a sensual sax solo, which combined with the sexy...
So are you saying that jazz prefigures all other world music?
Exactly. Like everything, it's evolutionary, right?
And
everything's evolved.
Just to be clear, was the cassowary playing...
The survival of the species, right?
Was it playing a saxophone, or has the baritone sax been based on the shape and neck of a cassowary?
The baritone sax has been based on the shape and neck of the cassowary.
Okay,
sexy human legs, saxophone throat.
Okay. It's an absolutely irresistible combination.
Irresistible. So then early man lowers his guard, you know, he chills out, he goes, nothing to fear here. In fact, might go and say hi and maybe have a chat. Chat with the owner of those sexy legs, walks over, and then he's got a beak in his eye socket again, you know, within seconds of entering the clearing.
But not the claw. The claw is still unused at this stage.
That's probably his last thought is, bloody hell, if this is what's happening to my eye socket, I dread to think what's going to happen with that claw. Joins the party. Because your eye is right back at your rear cortex. It's been pecked through your skull.
But the remaining eye has therefore been forced out a bit because of the pressure. And as it dangles to the floor, it gets a perfect view of the claw.
The other eye exactly is dangling, a bit like CCTV at that point. It's down to the body, but it's swiveling.
Yeah.
You've still got some swivel control.
So the brain's inner joystick is still working at this stage.
Yeah. The inner joystick's still working. The footage now looks grainy because your optical nerve's been damaged. Okay. So you've got grainy CCTV style footage.
But if you say enhance, yeah, it comes back.
Exactly. And and then you rue the day and then die.
Golly.
We had an email from someone called Kim Kenchington on this topic. She says, I have seen both Chris Rea and a Rea.
Wow.
And disappointingly was attacked by neither.
I'm reassured to hear that. I'm not disappointed.
Why the rear didn't attack her, because we've established subsequently they're a peaceful bird.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's quite uncharacteristic for Chris Rea to be that.
Very unusual.
Yeah.
Placid.
And thank goodness you didn't see the famous crooner Chris Cassowary. Otherwise, you'd have been in real trouble.
He is absolutely vicious. Yeah. In fact, the story goes, have you ever heard Chris Rea? tell the story of how he wrote driving home for Christmas.
Oh, God.
But the full version of the story is Chris Cassowary was in the back, didn't make it into the actual song, and they stop off at every services on the way and beat the shit out of everyone they could see. So they'd go into the M&S concession and just chuckle past the salads on the floor and just slap people.
And he'd be punching holes in the buckets that keep the flowers with his little bladed shoes that he'd got, didn't he? Yeah.
Exactly.
Making a real mess of the upholstery really in the back of Chris Rea's car. Yeah, nasty piece of work. Beautiful singing voice, though. Fine. So that there's a correction there. So does that mean that everything else, presumably, in the last week's missive was, all above board, right? Factually accurate.
Everything else was absolutely factually accurate, as far as I'm aware. We've also had a lot of emails from people suggesting topics.
Uh-huh.
This is from someone called Spurbs.
Good old Spurbs.
Old Spurbsy.
Hey, Mike, Henry, and other guy.
I like that.
Hey, Spurb-patron. I'm a big fan of Spurb.
Yeah, Spurb is really...
absolutely bastard.
We should maybe give Spurb his own...
It should be Mike, Henry, and Spurbs.
Oh, no.
Because at least Spurbs, people will be able to remember that name. Rather than
new bean, we have a bean changeover.
The bean reshuffle.
Play the theme.
Spurbs writes, "It's been a dream of mine since childhood to become a middle-aged British comedian."
Oh, okay.
Despite not being interested in comedy or being British.
Okay.
You're regretting subbing in Spurbs now?
Yeah, Spurbsy
I'm enjoying Spurbs.
He's someone who very much. He's a risk taker, isn't he, socially? I think with Spurbsy, I think
I'm that man. I'm enjoying Spurbsy immensely. I'm enjoying his bold gambit. I want to hear more from Spurbs.
Well, he's about to deliver a very backhanded compliment, so here we go.
Oh, not Eve already? Bloody, he's negging us, isn't he?
Okay. You're falling for it, boys. You're absolutely falling for it. Now I can live that dream vicariously with three indistinguishable voices with meandering, mildly funny conversations.
That is as backhanded as it gets, isn't it?
Spurbsy, okay. Spurbsy has pulled off quite a trick here, which is...
He separated Ben from the pack early doors, which was a clever move.
The pack early doors. He's an absolute master.
You realise I was the weakest of the herd.
It certainly drew me in.
I am now 100% dependent on Spurbsy for my any sense of self-worth or... I mean, that transference has happened 100% now.
Yeah.
It's psychologically that it would take years of work to separate Spurbsy from my sense of self.
To de-spurb.
De-spurbing at this point, it would almost take so long that it's safer, quicker, be easier for me and the people around me, the people that love me, if I just get married to Spurbs or... just become part of his entourage. I think it's the only healthy way forward at this point. It just feels easier.
Touché, Spurbs.
Henry, are you ready for the final line of the email? I think is the coup de grace when it comes to...
You're not even finished. Oh, no.
It's not even finished. What has Spurbs got in store for us now? Okay.
He's sealing the negging deal here, I think. So Spurbs then goes on to recommend something we might want to talk about. He says, anyways, talk about mermaids or something. Who cares? Love, Spurbs.
Oh, the coup de Spurbs.
Right. So the Kudos Burbs. Obviously, mermaids is the next topic we're going to be discussing. I don't think we need to... Yeah,
but we know it doesn't matter. At least we know it doesn't matter.
But it's going to have to be mermaids. Oh, Spurbsy. I tell you what, I'm glad I don't work in a kind of office space with Spurbsy sitting opposite me. Do you know what I mean? Because every day you'd go into work just thinking, what is Spurbsy going to think? What's he going to say?
What's he going to make me do today?
What's he going to make me do today?
Is he going to make me get into trouble?
Because he's a powerful psychological manipulator.
He's got a vice-like grip on me, certainly.
So it's been... I just want to say, guys, I've really enjoyed these two episodes we did together.
Yeah.
I look back on it fondly. Yeah, I guess change the email address... I'd change the email address password and I won't be able to look at it.
Yeah, and it'll be Spurbs. What should we call it from now on? Spurbs's World?
Spurbs Legend 1, I reckon.
Spurbs Legend 1?
Yeah, probably.
Ben, you need to... Well, if I was you, what I would do is pack everything you can into a rucksack and just do the long walk. So it's 5 years. You need to just walk, just keep walking around the country. And it's basically what you're doing is you put... If I understand Spurbsy and what makes him tick, which obviously I have no right to speculate, but the Spurbsy type, I think you need a 5-year walk in the wilderness and then prostrate yourself in front of Spurbsy, show him the sores on your face, the sores on your arms and legs.
Yeah.
And just hope that Spurbsy takes pity on you.
It makes you a saint.
And even then there's only a 30% chance that he would acknowledge me even being there.
The most likely response is Spurbsy will not attend the meeting, even if it's on Zoom. and you'll have wasted those 5 years in the wilderness. At that point, all you can do then is double up and do 10 years in the wilderness. Bearing in mind that every stretch you're in the wilderness, the chances of Spurbsy then acknowledging it when you finished it go down. But the length of time you have to spend in the wilderness goes up.
Yeah. You've got to lean into it even as Spurbs slowly withdraws.
So you're an exponential Spurbsy, Spurbsy wilderness.
It's the Spurbs penance.
And then that will go on until my dying day. Then he will finally turn up at my funeral and ruin it.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a kind of backhanded eulogy.
He'll do a backhanded eulogy and... Little things like at your funeral, I'm guessing he'll have loosened some of the legs in some of the pews, or he'll have people that will have loosened them for him. A lot of the pews will be just wonky enough that people can't really focus on your passing and how much your life has meant to them and stuff, because just all the pews will just be slightly off kilter.
I think he'll have loosened the lid on the coffin so that when it's being put down into the hole, the lid slips off. To reveal me, I'm lying face down, and I'm clothed apart from I've got a bare ass. He's put me in chaps.
Yeah. Yeah,
he also will have at some point got off with every person in the congregation in their distant past, but they'll have only recognised him quite late on.
And he'll play that in on a screen. He'll have a little screen and a projector that he'll set up.
Well, him getting off with every member of the congregation
over a 20-year period,
and like even before he says it, people will be thinking we've been spurbed here. But even if they're not thinking it, he will then say,
just for the record,
you've been you've all been spurbed,
yeah,
big time. And then techno music plays. There's lasers. Actually, gets quite fun at that point. Yeah.
It wasn't a church at all. The walls fall away. You're actually in a water park.
You're in a water park.
He releases 1,000 cassowaries into the room.
At that point, people are actually, they're on their feet, they're dancing. You know what? This has actually been quite fun. This is a memorable day. There's energy. People are getting off with each other now. Ben, members of your family are getting off with each other.
Yeah. If they're not being torn to shreds by a cassowary.
thanks for going there, Henry.
It's Spurbsy, right? It's what Spurbsy can,
it's the Spurb effect.
Spurbsy can free in people. But then the final thing, this is the amazing bit. The music cuts down, right? Blackout, spotlight, the corner, It's Ben. You're alive.
Was I Spurbsy all along?
Spurbsy. Yeah. You were Spurbsy, but you haven't even finished saying I was Spurbsy all along before a snooker cue down your throat. It's Wozniak. He was in the loo.
I missed all of this.
He's missed all of this.
So hang on, why is Wozniak put a snooker cue?
I always bring a snooker cue with me to any sort of live event ceremony.
You always
just in case there's trouble.
Why have you attacked me with it?
I didn't know.
And you know what? To this day, he can't actually answer that question. He doesn't know.
It's just
even
instinct.
Under questioning by Emily Maitlis.
And I would admit fully that I did it.
Oh yeah. He knows that. There's 40 CCTVs from different people's eyes that hanging off from Casper attacks.
It's completely indisputable. Yeah.
Right. Well, I just want to say, thank you for your email, Spurbs. It's personally quite exciting to read the email that is the beginning of that journey. You know, we know that we've got that to come.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to be, it's nice to have something to look forward to, really, I think. And we now know what's going to happen. How long is that going to take? 40 years?
Roughly, yeah, I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a 40-year cycle. Once Spurbsy engages with you, or once Spurbsy's in your life, it's a 40-year cycle till you're free of Spurbs and dead.
Yeah. So thank you very much, listeners, beanists. I don't think that's the topic for another day, perhaps. There's been a bit about that, about what we are.
Beanheads.
As a collective term. Beanheads. Is it? Okay.
Beanheads.
There's been some concern about that. Anyway, thanks for the correspondence. We do read it all. We haven't got time to read it all out today, obviously, but I mean, perhaps there'll be less and less as the weeks goes on, and we will get through it all.
Also, that was largely the fault of Spurbsy today.
Right, that was true. We have had some very, very excellent suggestions for future topics, so keep them coming, please, and we will begin to get around to them very soon.
Yes, the email address is 3beansaladpod@gmail.com, and the Twitter is beansaladpod@beansaladpod.
Ta-ra for now.
Ta-ra!
Ta-ra, and all hail Spurbsy.